Robin graduated in 2008 from the Phoenix program with a specialization in acting. She has worked continually as an actor. She continues to work as a costume designer. She has also written. She's had a one-act show produced. She is presently working on a one-woman show. She has worked as an instructor of and a teaching assistant of children's theater with the Arts Umbrella. And she is presently the Communication Engagement Officer with Pacific Theater. Matt Gordon graduated in a comprehensive program at the Phoenix Theater in 2009. He again has worked almost continuously as an actor. He has also broadened his horizons into writing as well as directing. He has directed or assistant directed almost a dozen shows since he's graduated, including this summer having the very distinct privilege of working alongside another one of our alumni, Meg Rowe, as her assistant director on Bard and the Beach's The Tempest. Written plays that have been produced across Canada and the Fringe Productions, worked very closely with another alumna theater company, It's a Zoo Productions. So I'm just going to get them started on their history here at the Phoenix, and then I'm going to open the questions up to you because I'm sure you've got some questions to ask of them as well. So, Caitlin.
Hi.
You're a minister's daughter who grew up in Ladner. What went wrong?
She told me she was going to ask that.
How did you come to the Phoenix? What made you decide to go into theater?
I have had actually a long relationship with Pacific Theater, which is the company that first produced this show. Ron Reed, who's the artistic director of that company in Vancouver, is a close family friend of my dad's. And so I grew up attending that theater. And it's kind of there that that's sort of my first encounter with theater and where I first fell in love with it. And I don't know why, but I remember one day my mom came downstairs and said to my sister and I, "Do you guys want to audition for Charlotte's Web?" Which was a community theater production going on in Ladner. And we got in, and I played a lamb. And I just remember, I was 12, and I remember feeling like there was nothing as great as this and that this was it. I just felt like at home. And I was very, very shy. I still am a little bit shy. But when I was on stage, I felt free of I was bullied a bit and all those sorts of things. And so when I was on stage, I just felt like I could do anything. I could be a crazy character. I could be funny or silly. And it wasn't Caitlin. It was the character. And it sort of opened up that sort of freedom for me. So, and then I had a really great theater program in high school. And then I auditioned for the Phoenix. I worked on my monologue on the ferry ride over. And somehow I got in. And then just has kept going. And I'm gonna keep doing it until it gets stupid, like until I can't do it anymore. And so far, it hasn't stopped. So, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks, Caitlin.
You're welcome.
Mac, when did you discover theater? How did you become interested in theater?
I think I was in the eighth grade, and some of my friends were doing The Importance of Being Earnest in the school play, and I signed up to be crew for it, and it was just fun hanging around and doing that. So the next year I auditioned for the plays and sort of started to get cast in roles as I went through. And then actually more wanted to be a teacher than an actor when I was finishing in high school. And I decided that the easiest way to get to a teaching degree was to get a Bachelor of Fine Arts in something that I wanted to do, and instead of doing something that I was a little less interested in. So I decided to go to theater school here at UVic, and my plan was to get my bachelor's and then to go and do the PDPP program. But when I moved over to Vancouver after it was all done, I decided I would do a couple of auditions before I gave up on my dream and started getting cast in roles. So I have just been doing it ever since.
All right, so the teaching didn't quite work out for you, but you found another use for your degree.
Yeah. That's right.
What made you choose UVic?
It's a kind of a funny story, actually. I was in grade 10, and I had a crush on this girl. And she told me that she was going to go to the University of Victoria when she finished high school. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty good. Yeah, University of Victoria, all right. And so then in grade 12, I just still had it in my head that I was going to go to UVic, and she never went. But I did.
Good thing she didn't go.
I was going to say that's a good thing because if you don't know, Caitlin and Mac are married, and they met here. So it's a good thing that Mac wasn't previously committed. So what did this program offer you, Mac, in terms of, you know, what was your journey through the program like?
I came in first year with the intention to go into the acting program and specialize in acting. And then when I went to audition for it, I didn't get into the acting program. So I decided the next year that I still wanted to play challenging big roles, and I wasn't going to have that opportunity, so I was going to make my own opportunity. So I started to write my first play when I was in second year, and then by third year we did it in SATCO, which is the Student Alternative Theater Company, and I realized that I really, really liked writing as well as acting. And I took a third year directing class and realized that I really, really liked directing, and sort of just went through school doing every different thing that I possibly could. I also took all the applied theater courses, which was great too, with Warwick Dobson, who later on went on to become the chair of the department. And I remember when he became the prof for applied theater, we were interviewing a whole bunch of different people to see who the next prof was going to be. And the three candidates who came in before were saying what they were going to do, and they were going to teach from this book by this guy, Warwick Dobson. And then the third candidate came in, and it was Warwick Dobson. So we were like, oh, this is probably the guy that we should choose.
I've heard of this guy.
Yeah. And he told us he was going to bring Diana Krall here to UVic to do a concert. That was his, like, big hook when he was pitching himself. And he never did it, as far as I know.
I beg to differ. She got an honorary degree while you were here, and she played on the UVic stage. But, no, she wasn't actually in the building.
Right. Well, it was close.
Caitlin, what about your journey through the Phoenix?
I came the year after Mac did, and I also didn't have, like, a straight, direct path through the Phoenix. In my first year I auditioned for the acting program, I was here. It's a common story. We were first year here in the department. You've come from high school usually, and you're usually the star of your program in high school, and you come to this program here, and all of a sudden you're surrounded by 100 stars of their high school drama program. And then all of you were vying for just a few spots in that acting specialization. And so, needless to say, I did not get in my first try either. And they have an interesting sort of second option here, though, at the Phoenix. If you come back for your second year, you can re-audition again. You can take, it's called Acting for Non-Majors class. Jan was my teacher, actually. And then you can re-audition. And that was a really important year for me, that second year, and important choice, I guess, to come back and try again, because it was really in that year that I remembered why I love theater in the first place. With all the pressure of that big audition kind of off my shoulders, I was able to just fall in love with it again and play, and I felt like I came a lot more into my own in that year. Auditioned again and then got into the acting program after that. So I went through the acting specialization, but also did a number of other things as well, like Mac. I worked with Sandra, who I'm sure many of you know. I was her assistant in the box office, and so I learned the ticketing program there, as well as sort of management and front-of-house skills. Took marketing. I took one costume class with Mary Kerr, who's one of the design professors here. And all of that sort of mishmash of experience has served me greatly in the real world since, and I've drawn on all of it, including the experience of not getting in, of not getting into the program. And then even once I was in the acting program, I didn't really get, like, the big starring roles that I had hoped to get while I was here. So I think all of that prepared me for what real life is actually like. You're not going to get the starring parts every single time you go out for them, right? Or very few times. So all of that sort of, whether I was aware of it at the time or not, I think looking back on it now, sort of I was able to cultivate a resiliency towards those sort of what could first feel like rejection, but is really just what the business is like.
So you talked about your own rejection and some disappointments that you had while you were here. What kept you going? What keeps you going? Because I'm certain, you know, maybe in your professional life since graduating, there have been moments when you haven't gotten a phone call, or, you know, somebody else got a role that you auditioned for and you thought you were going to be cast in it. What keeps you going, Caitlin?
That's a good question. To be honest, I think about all the time, like, should I be doing this? Should this be what I'm doing? And I hope one day that will subside a little bit, but I don't know if it ever does. I wonder sometimes if you're a self-employed artist and you choose that challenging path, if it's ever going to, I don't think it's ever going to necessarily be easy, but I feel like this is just what I'm supposed to be doing. And so anything else, whenever I start to think, like, I'm also interested in teaching, and I do teach a little bit on the side, so whenever, and that would have been, that was kind of the toss-up for me as well, was theater or teaching, and so whenever I think, like, oh, maybe I should just go do my PDP, and Mac and I can live in an actual apartment with more than one room, and, like, yeah, we live in a very small studio apartment. So when I think about things like that, but I don't know. I only have one life, and this is what I really want to do, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Why not?
Yeah, thank I don't know.
That's a good answer. I was going to say revenge.
No.
We're sorry, Mac. We're sorry. It worked out fine for you.
Yeah.
I'd really like to open the questions up to the audience. Yes, sir, you've got your hand up.
You're working with your insignificant other. How does this work? And you obviously, you've got a lovely smile on your face, so obviously it works for the both of you.
How do we make that work? We became friends here at the Phoenix because Mac cast me in one of his plays. And so, yeah, smart move, right? And so...
Because she was good.
No. I look back on that. Yeah, good looking. All right. I look back on that, and I think that sort of actually laid a groundwork for... We were working together before we were even friends or dating. So I know for lots of people, they say, like, I can never work with my spouse. How do you do that? But I think that we have... laid that sort of foundation of this is our working relationship. And we're also just, we know each other really well. It is tough. Like, we're living with my younger brother, bless him, in his bachelor apartment. And we're spending 24 hours a day together right now. So we know, like, today I spent some time in one room and Max spent some time in another room. And we had some quiet time apart. And you just know to give each other breaks, but it is a gift that we have been able to work together as much as we have. Lots of theater couples don't have that experience, and we've had a number of them in the past few years since we've been married. So
it's pretty fun to be on stage together.
That
you get
too.
To share some magic moments with the person that you love, and look across at them and sort of go, "Whoa, here we are on stage in front of an audience of 200 people, telling a story that we like." And doing what we love to do.
It's like pretty pinch me kind of thing. So, I don't know, we'll keep doing it as long as it works. Yeah, but I am doing a show coming up in a month and a bit, and I was saying to Mac, it's going to be weird being in a show where you come watch it and you're not in it with me.
I'm not coming to watch it.
How presumptuous.
Another question. Yes.
Both have the same process.
Oh, that's a great question. Do we both have the same process?
Do you mean in rehearsal? Oh, okay.
Yeah, for working on a play. I would say no, not at all. I think we have very different processes. Caitlin is really good at memorizing lines, so oftentimes she will she doesn't have to work on the script as much outside of rehearsal as I do for learning the lines. So when she's working on the script, she's doing more work, I would say, like writing down what her objectives are, what she wants in the scene, that sort of thing. So she does a little bit more pencil work, whereas it's harder for me to memorize lines, so I do a lot of that work while I'm memorizing. So I'll go through a script, and I'll look at the first line, and I'll say it until I can say it without looking at it. And then the next line, I'll say the two lines until I can say them both without looking at them. And then three lines until I can do the whole play without looking at it, essentially. And as I go through that, I sort of break it down into beats, and I use the punctuation a lot, and I kind of turn it into like a poem. And each one of those little beats of the poem becomes a different color, I guess, if you will, as I go through it. I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain.
You can imagine this while you're watching the show tonight. There are a lot of lines. So imagine our very different process.
But I think we also are very different personalities in the rehearsal room. So when we're in rehearsal, I don't know, how would you take over?
I think that's it. I think a lot of the tech stuff is very different, and what is great is that when you do have your partner working with you, when I go home, or even like, okay, last night was opening night, and at intermission we kind of were able to check in with each other and said like, okay, I think we need to like connect whatever more, and we just kind of had a moment where we were able to do that. And maybe if I was just working with a guy who I just met 2 weeks ago, like I wouldn't feel as comfortable doing that, you know what I mean? Or as confident sharing that, or as being able to be as vulnerable as a performer to say, like, I didn't feel like I got that one moment great. Like, if we can just, like, hold hands for a second, I'll be better. Or after rehearsal, being able to sort of chat about that as well and encourage each other, too. All of those things kind of complement each other, I hope, for the most part.
Yeah, the encouraging is pretty key. I was reading something today, actually. Director Jason Reitman, who's a film director, someone asked him in this Q&A, I can't remember exactly how the question went, but essentially they asked him what is better, like positive reinforcement or like negative notes when you're directing a movie. And he said there's no more dangerous words than good job. That those are actually sometimes can lead to poor work. And what I think we have the opportunity to do is take the analytical side out and just bring in the marriage side of supporting each other. And where you might not necessarily get a compliment from the director on a part that's working well, for a reason, we can come together and say, hey, look, you're doing really good work, and not have it affect the work. I don't know, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's about respect and support, and I'm also an actor with who is married to another actor, and that sense of trust, like I can, it sounds like you've touched on it, that I can say to my partner, I don't know if this is working, can you tell me what's not working in this scene that we're working on together? But not to undermine the director, but just that sense of trust and respect that there's nobody else I would ask for that.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I'd never be that open with anybody. But
right, exactly, friend. Yeah.
And another question. Yes, sir.
I was wondering if your prospective futures are likely to remain in BC.
We really love BC, and both of our families were both from here. A lot of our friends have migrated out east. Toronto is calling many, many people out there. But we don't really feel the call to go to Toronto, so it is tough in Vancouver. That's where we're based right now to make a go of it. There's obviously not enough funding and very few parts and all these sorts of issues. But then at the same time, I love BC and Vancouver so much. So we're also pretty much willing to go anywhere we can get work.
Yeah. There's a bit of an artistic brain drain happening in BC right now, which is too bad, but we feel loyal to BC because this is where we started and where we've been able to get work and where we've established relationships, and we don't want to leave. I don't think that it can get much worse. I hope it can't get much worse here, and as long as it stays stable enough that we can pay our bills, we'll stay here. But, you know, there comes a time when you have to do what's best for you, too. So hopefully arts funding is sticking around and maybe getting a little bit better here so that we can keep good artists in British Columbia.
Yeah, we would like to stay.
Another question. Oh, yes.
The acting that I see here is as good as you will see anywhere. How does Molly Parker from Maple Ridge get into movies and TV, and you two maybe will or will not? What determines whether or not you get on a TV series or into movies?
Great question.
TV and movies are, and commercials are a very different beast than theater, and they're all different beasts than each other. So they all have different sort of strategies that you employ as a performer when you step into the audition room. They all have different styles of performance as well. If you watch a commercial, you'll notice that the actors in it act a little bit differently than a stage actor, who acts a little bit differently than a movie actor, who acts very differently than a TV actor. So I think it's a matter of polishing all the tools in your kit to be able to open as many doors as you possibly can. And so the training that you get, I think, at a university like UVic is sort of your base. That's what gives you the ability to have presence in a room, on stage, in front of a camera. It gives you the ability to have confidence, and it gives you the ability to bring a piece of text to life. And then as you get out into the professional world, maybe you do some film classes that teach you a little bit more of the technique of how to underplay things, how to interact with the camera. As you start to work on the stage, you realize that a lot more kind of comes from that internal engine that happens between two actors on a stage, and the objectives and wants and desires of those characters and how they clash up against each other in a dramatic fashion. So to make a long answer long, I don't know. And a lot of it has to do with business side of things too, right? Just like in entrepreneurship, sometimes it's about people who you know. And the same thing goes for film and TV. The same thing goes for theater. And the relationships that you establish, the more honest and true those relationships are, the further they're going to take you.
And I also feel, for me personally, I can only speak for myself, but film and television has never been my first goal or my first love. And when I have tried to pursue it a little bit, I found that it sort of has split my focus from theater. And so I've tried sometimes to take, like, this 6 months, I've got some theater gigs, I'm going to work on that. And then if that dries up, I'll think, then that's when I'm, okay, to my agent, I'm free now. But it doesn't really work that way. They really, agents anyways, the ones that I know, want you to be available all the time to pick up, to when they call you, you pick up the phone and say, yeah, I'm there for an audition or a gig, and maybe do one theater show a year is kind of their ideal. And that's just not what I want to do right now. So that's why I haven't pursued it as much. Yeah.
Film and TV can often be more of a business, whereas theater, in my experience, can be more of an art. There's less money in theater than film and TV, of course. There's less fame, but I don't think fame is something that we're necessarily interested in. We're interested in making ends meet, doing the thing that we love, and that's what we've been able to do so far.
I think we have time for one more question. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really important thing I think about. Like an athlete would never stop, right? They would never stop training. A ballet dancer would never stop working, and a visual artist will never stop painting. So sometimes it's easy for, because actors, like we are the artist ourselves, it's easy to be like, okay, I checked off that box, I have that piece of paper, I'm done. And I think sometimes some people fall into that trap, but what was really drilled into me at school and also now outside of school as well is that you have to treat it like you're any other type of artist and practicing your craft. So yeah, Vancouver is great for workshops or other training. I did an intensive with the Arts Club a few years ago that was really great. They have the voice intensive, of course. There's lots of things that you can keep doing to keep yourself taught, because you have to, if you're not practicing, if you don't have the good fortune to be in a show, then And if you let that slip away, then when you walk into the audition room, you're not going to be as, you know, as castable, I guess.
I always think about, like, Malcolm Gladwell, how he talks about how to become a master of something, you need to get 10,000 hours. And so if you want to become a master actor, to get 10,000 hours just from doing plays that you're cast in is going to take you a very, very, very long time. So the more things you can do, the better, the more time you have to practice that craft. So another job that we sometimes do is simulations with police officers, simulations with medical students. So you go down to the hospital and they're doing their tests and you're playing a sick patient. And maybe you don't have any lines in it, but you still have to believably represent a sick patient so that this student can really have the experience of what it is. And not just working with another one of their students who's like, you know, if they're rude to me in that room, I'm going to be rude back to them. And that's going to be a valuable lesson from them. And it's going to be a valuable lesson for me as an actor of reacting in the moment and following those instincts that you have, which are what is going to make your performance come alive on stage, is following that instinct and sort of being in that position where anything can happen in the context of a play that you've done 100 times, right?
Thank you so much, Caitlin and Mac, for allowing us into your lives a little bit tonight. We're going to let them go because they've got a show to prepare for. We have a little bit of a break before the show. But I just want to say on a personal note how proud I was to see where they have come as actors and as people. It was a great privilege to be able to teach them while they were here, and just wonderful to see how their lives have grown and what wonderful people they have become, and practicing what they love is a joy as a teacher for me to see. I think that the spotlight on alumni is such an important part of our program for our audiences and for our students past and present. So I hope you will join me in thanking them for this opportunity.